So I was going to tell you guys, so I did a little experiment today.
Oh, was it masturbation?
did you get to the third ring in the butt plug?
I don't know what that means, but it sounds owie.
We should call ourselves the third ring of the butt plug.
History Defeats Itself is a comedy podcast. Kevin, John, and Greg are not experts, historians, or even all that smart.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to History Defeats Itself. We are part of the Sonar Network of podcasts. My name is Kevin Rosenquist. Thank you for listening to our show. History Defeats Itself is a comedy podcast that wonders if we as people learn from the past or if we simply repeat and defeat ourselves. I am joined by my co-hosts out there in Los Angeles, California, John Banks, Greg Mitchell. What's shaking, guys?
Well, I'm feeling really bad about my lighting because apparently it's not so great, so I'm adjusting my camera where I usually sit.
You also took your glasses off?
I took my glasses off. I'm super fucking pissed at you motherfuckers right now. I'm in a super bad mood. Fuck you guys. Fuck this show.
Maybe you're just not a dynamic human being who exudes his own light.
Probably
like
not.
Me. Yes. Like my pores have bulbs in them that, yep. that exude light.
That is a Rosenquist genetic trait.
Is it like a Christmas light string where like if one of them goes out, they all go out?
It's a huge pain in the ass. So hard to figure out which one it is.
Yeah. Kevin just like shuts down, falls down, and then she has to drag him to the wall, plug him in.
Recharge.
Yeah.
It's great though when I go in the crawl space. Don't need a flashlight. That's very handy. That's very handy.
Or if there's a snowstorm.
On each episode of History Defeats Itself, one of us will pick the topic and do the research while the other two don't do shit. They don't even know what we're going to talk about until it's revealed here during our recording session. And don't forget to rate and review our show when and where you can. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. After you listen to this episode, remember to head on over to our YouTube channel and check out HDI After Dark. We keep the cameras rolling after the episode and chat more about the topic. You can see our handsome faces and what novelty shirt John is wearing. What's it today, John?
So today it says Pink Freud, The Dark Side of Your Mom.
That's pretty solid, actually. Yep. That's one of your better ones.
So
I think I've seen that before, and I like it.
Thank you. I can't remember where I got this. Thank you, whoever I got this from.
Yeah.
TeePublic, maybe?
When you're on our YouTube channel, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. It makes us feel better about ourselves.
Fuck, I never subscribed to that.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No.
God damn it.
Oh, wait, Sorry. Hold on. Okay. I'll be right back.
You too? A2 Jonathan.
Yes, Kevinathy.
All right, that's all I got. If we're ready to go, let's do this.
Yeah, John.
So tonight, it's me.
Yay.
Okay, so I want to start this episode with a question. Greg, Kevin.
John.
Greg.
John.
Greg.
John.
Have
Are you going to ask
ever,
a fucking question?
Have you ever been in any sort of accident, whether it be car, bike?
Yes.
Turtle?
Yes.
And what kind of accident would you like to expound on?
Yeah,
that?
I crashed snowboarding, cracked three ribs, and ended up in the hospital for 3 days with a punctured lung, and we couldn't do a podcast that week.
God, that was a miserable time for me.
Okay, sorry.
Not you.
Yeah,
me.
That was the worst day of my life.
It was.
And were you wearing a helmet?
Were you wearing a seatbelt?
I was wearing a helmet, yes.
And were you wearing any other protective gear?
No.
Condom, maybe?
No. Yeah, I mean, you know. I mean, I don't, clearly you haven't snowboarded. Obviously, I was wearing a condom. Got to be safe.
You don't want to get a snow angel, Prego.
It's pretty good.
You'd have weird-looking kids.
No, that was. I mean, how big of accidents are we talking?
I'm just... Anything that comes to mind. So if
I mean, growing up, I had skateboard accidents, bike accidents, and... I mean, I didn't own a bike helmet till I was, like, 40 almost.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember those BMX bikes that you would kind of always trade parts out for yourself and put everything, put it all together?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I had one of those, and we used to put, I used to have Oakley grips, right, that you put on the end of the handlebars, and you'd spray them with hairspray to get them to kind of lubricate and slide on easier. And I did that, and then I took my bike to the wash, which is where all the cool jumps were.
Apparently.
So I went over this jump, and as soon as I was in midair, both grips went off the handlebar, and I'm just sitting there, instead of holding onto the handlebars, I'm holding onto my grips while I'm in the air. And, you know, if you're on a bike and you're in the air, you want to be holding onto the handlebars so you don't crash and die. So I crashed, boom, and my handlebar went into my chest, and I got winded. And you know what happens when you're winded? You keep saying repeatedly that you can't breathe.
That is true. That
you're
is.
Like, oh, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And then you climb around because you think you're dying, but you're not dying. You just can't breathe.
And were you wearing any sort of safety equipment at that time?
I was. Yes, I wore a parachute because I was getting big air back in those days.
Did you say a parachute?
Yeah, I had a parachute on.
Like a World War II, like the really big ones. Like it didn't have enough air to deploy, but so it wrapped around you and actually hurt you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
All right. Well
I could tell you about a car accident if you want to hear about that. So I got into a car accident. I was with my brother. We were going to see Ted Leo and the Pharmacist, and we never got there. So we were pulling up to an intersection, and we were stopped because it was a stoplight, and it was red. So my brother decided to follow the law and stop. So this car came from over the hill behind us, and they didn't stop. So we were just like sitting ducks. So we got rear-ended, and then our car went into the car in front of us, and the car in front of us went into the car in front of them to kind of let you know what kind of force that had. And the car that we were in was a little Honda, and it became an even littler Honda. And push! And my brother and I both went to the hospital via a paramedic ambulance that was in Tacoma Park, Maryland. And what happened was they strapped us to these boards and they kind of tape you on there. So you're kind of sitting there like you're going down. You're in the same position that you are when you're going down a water slide. And they also give you a wedgie too. I don't know why, but it's also like what happens when
it's medical thing.
They're like, they want to make you as uncomfortable as possible. So when you get to the hospital, they take you out, you feel like you're better.
Yeah, they're trying to keep you prone. So what happened was they tie you in too. So you can't move your hands or your arms or anything. You're like bound in there. So we're both in this ambulance. You can't even turn your neck because you're in one of those fucking neck brace things. And my brother and I are talking. I'm like, hey, this is a great idea to go to that concert. And then the fucking ambulance hits the fucking curb. And this toolbox that was like over my head like flew off the shelf and like missed my head by inches, and it hit the ground with such a loud thud that motherfucker must have weighed like 50 pounds.
Were you wearing a helmet for that?
No, just parachute.
Oh, okay.
And fucking, dude, I almost died.
Wait. Were you wearing parachute pants?
Oh, of course. Now we're talking.
Of course I was. Hey, man.
He was a big Hammer fan back in those days.
I was just going to say, I wasn't going to see MC Hammer, but... Isn't that funny? I could have died in an ambulance by something.
That's hilarious.
It's yes, ironical. Okay.
That's my accident story.
All right, so tonight we're going to talk about the history of safety.
Not crash helmets?
Not crash helmets. And I got to say, safety, because there are a million different things in the world that you could talk about safety. So what I'm trying to do, I have this, it's in two acts. The Ooh. First act is going to be Shakespearean in nature.
Do we have to talk like that? I'm really not good at it, and I could never understand Shakespeare.
The first act, we're going to do nothing but accents. Horribly.
Oh, great.
But I'm going to kind of, like, I tried to kind of break it down into, like, just different events and kind of how people started to look at safety, right? And then we're going to get into, and then I picked a specific thing that we're going to talk about, the like evolution of its of like safety features on that specific item.
How much time did you dedicate to the safety dance?
You ruined everything.
Damn it, did I ruin your last call?
Well, now we can't dance if we wanna. We can't leave our friends behind. God damn it.
Yeah, that's okay. Your friends don't dance.
That's true.
Well, they're no friends of yours if they don't dance. So
no, that's a good point.
Man, yeah. You think anybody under 40 is going to get that?
No.
Yeah. All right.
Do you think anyone under 40 listens to this podcast?
Yeah, actually, most of our listeners are under 40.
That is
How
true.
You know that. You don't know that.
I do know that. I reach out to all of them every day.
<That's> wow.
And most of their parents have asked me to stop reaching out to their children. So.
Yeah. I believe that.
All right. So historically, the first signs we see of a government trying to implement safety regulations was in the second millennium BC, where Babylonian king Hammurabi, he's come up before.
He has.
Set laws to execute masons whose constructed houses fell and killed the owners or occupants.
That sounds like an industry I would not want to get into.
Well,
fucked up that house. You're dead.
Right. It's not like, let's figure out what's wrong. We're just going to kill that motherfucker, and he can't tell anybody what he did wrong, so it's probably going to happen again. So not the best strategy, but a strategy.
It always comes down to rebar. Like, you're not using enough rebar.
Stone tablets. You need more stone tablets.
I always like that. Like that. That's sort of the old school way. I mean, it still exists, but it's just like it's not about finding the problem. It's about who can I blame for this?
Yeah,
you know, like
who's the electrician?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So the birth of the Industrial Revolution bred filthy and dangerous working conditions in many factories. Conditions employers were slow to address. Massachusetts.
Anytime you have to say Massachusetts. You should just say Vermont.
Vermont legislators were the first to act.
No one's fact checking this.
No.
That's true.
Vermont.
But then I'll probably fuck that up. Vermontese legislators were the first to act by improving the nation's first safety and health legislation in 1877. The law required many safety precautions, such as guards for belts, shafts, and gears, and adequate fire exits. By 1890,
why do you need shafts and gears and adequate fire exits for belts?
Well, if that's have you ever been to a question. Disco inferno?
Don't you wear a belt, Kevin?
You know.
Not with his leisure shorts.
Like belt, you know, on an assembly line belt kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
yeah. Gotcha. By 1890, 9 states had implemented regular factory inspections, and others followed with similar requirements to guard hazardous equipment.
Are you reading, like, is everything you wrote in Spanish, and you're translating yes, it into yeah. English?
You're translating it in real time?
Where else am I going to work on a Spanish?
Yeah, drink more wine. Okay. That's a good idea.
Okay. Pero el resto de pies, no. No tengo serioso.
Accidente.
All right. But the rest of the country wouldn't take serious steps until 1911, when the first U.S. workers' compensation laws were enacted. A year later, the National Safety Council formed to collect data and initiate accident prevention programs. The council estimated that 18 to 21,000 workers died from workplace injuries in 1912. Prior to that, there was no official record keeping. So today they collect data on everything. Like days missed for work and all kinds of stuff. But
wouldn't that suck dying at work?
Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah, that would suck.
Like, where do you
especially if your boss is a dick. Like, you're just like, ah, fucking hate my job. And then you're just like up there just talking to all your guys about how you hate your job. And then, you know, a pole falls on you and goes through your heart.
So if you guys were to die at work, what would be the most likely cause?
John Banks.
Murdering each other.
Probably. I mean, I think in today's age, probably like a mass shooter would probably be the most likely.
A lot
thing.
Darker than I thought that was going to go.
We work for a lumber company, man.
Wood can fall.
That's wood true. Can fall right on your head.
Honestly, probably like a truck or like an 18-wheeler coming in the yard or a forklift. Mm. That'd probably be the.
Oh, can you imagine if like one of those forks like pierces right through your midsection?
I think about it every time I'm in the yard.
And just disembowels you?
Yeah, no, I can't imagine that. That would suck so bad.
Then I would be stuck trying to re-embowel you.
I think this goes here.
I'm just like shoving it everything back
Give
inside
me that 2x4.
He's still alive. He's still good. John, you're still good. Stay with me, buddy. They'd be like, hey, what are you doing? I'm emboweling
John. I'm putting John back together. Give me a needle and some thread.
Like, I can't believe he ate Chipotle again today.
I wonder if, like, if it would. I wonder if that means that work would pay for my hernia surgery after that.
After you died, seems like the surgery would be unnecessary at that point.
Yeah, that is unnecessary. Yeah.
Or in this scenario, you're saying that you live because Greg put you back together.
Yes.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
God, what about you? What
but I didn't wash my hands, so you got sepsis.
Well, and also you know.
Is that how you get sepsis?
I don't think so.
By my dirty hands touching your intestines and shoving them back
into
your body.
Every case in history is from you. So what about you, Kevin? How would you get killed at work?
Massive choking heart attack donut. Due to the burrito I ate for Free Food Friday. Yeah.
How did you have Free Food Friday on a Wednesday?
I didn't.
There you go. Look at that's a question asked, question answered.
The reason why that my question sounded stupid was because Kevin, we were texting each other this morning, and Kevin said that he had a breakfast burrito today.
I did.
So.
Yes, but it wasn't. I mean, actually, you know what?
It was an out of pocket burrito.
No, actually, it was on the company. Was free breakfast Wednesday, I guess.
That's not as.
It doesn't have a good ring to it. Yeah.
No.
We're workshopping the title.
And plus, you have two more days to work. Wacky Wednesday burritos?
The whole enchilada Wednesday?
Yeah, again, we're workshopping.
Well, that's what is workshopping is workshopping. What are you doing, Kevin?
Nothing. Well, I didn't say you guys were supposed to be part of the workshop. Like, this is for me and my coworkers.
You know we can't help it. There's a problem. We want to solve it.
So it was common in the late 19th century that workers had to endure like crazy exposure to all different types of chemicals. And one of the worst chemical culprits at that time was white phosphorus because they were making matches, right? Everybody used matches back then. Now, I don't. Do you guys even have matches in your home?
I have matches.
Yeah.
I don't actually, but the company I work for, we do apparel, promotional products, things like that. And I do have people that request matches every now and then.
Mm.
For like breweries and stuff like that.
I think, how is he going to check if there's a gas leak in your house?
Well, that's a very, very, there's only, yeah.
Science.
See?
I mean, there's always only a yes or no there. There's no gray area.
We know how Greg's going to die.
Yeah. So. Yeah, if there's ever a time where someone's like at work, he's like, do you smell gas? Tell Greg, no, Greg, no. No.
So one of the, over time, exposure to white phosphorus causes workers' jaws to rot. The disease.
Jaws?
So your jaw. So the disease known as phosphorus necrosis or.
Sounds made up.
No, this sounds made up. Or fossy jaw. Eventually damaged vital organs and became fatal if left untreated.
Well, why were they eating? Why were they eating the matches? That's what I want to know.
Because it was the beginning of the 20th century. They didn't have food.
Oh, so. Is that like Bob Fosse jaw?
Yeah,
you can't sing musicals anymore or dance, whatever.
I guess because you're putting the phosphorus on, so you're probably just getting in your mouth. So that was the first place it hit. But it was like, yeah, apparently it would start causing your tissue to decay.
Wait, what are you doing with your mouth?
Eating matches.
You're breathing in phosphorus dust. This is where you breathe, Greg, right here. This is your breathing area.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things you get from breathing, and it doesn't create like a jaw issue.
Well, okay.
Usually it's a lung issue.
Well, right? We're going to get to that. That's coming up, okay?
All right. I'll be patient.
God.
No, you won't.
A 1910 Bureau of Labor study on the condition prompted the industry to develop a new way to make matches that eliminated the hazard. Hazardous chemical exposure caused many other serious illnesses throughout history, including lead poisoning, coal workers' pneumoconiosis. Man, I swear to God, I read it 10 times out loud.
Just say like, black lung.
AKA black lung, which actually my granddad had black lung.
Really?
And my dad has coal dust in his lungs, but I don't know if he actually has black lung. And in more modern times, asbestos and
Asbestos?
Yeah, asbestos. Yeah,
asbestos friend?
Asbestos?
Asbestos?
Oh, I see. You're making fun of me.
Right. Well, you're doing that for yourself. We're trying to get out of this.
We're really just playing only, off you.
The only reason why we're saying this is we don't want the listeners to think we're all dumb.
That is kind of why I do that.
Oh, that is hurtful. So, okay.
I read about an asbestos seven
mesothelioma. Asbestos.
Mesothelioma, yep. Yeah, you see the infomercials during the day on that when you're homesick from work.
Or late at night.
I don't know what it is. Do you know what it is? Actually, do either one of you know what it is?
Yeah, it's when asbestos gets trapped in your lung and your lung fucking builds some kind of a shell around it.
You mean asbestos? Like a
what did I say? Anyway, it's related to asbestos. Mesothelioma. Enjoy.
If you or someone you love has contracted mesothelioma.
And has been seriously injured or dead.
Yeah. We can't bring them back to life, but we can get you a little bit of money from this.
We can get you probably about $460.
Yeah.
We're going to keep the other $480,000.
Right. Because we care.
But these commercials are expensive.
Yeah. These ads don't pay for themselves.
Here at Mitchell Rosenquist Banks, the law firm that really is about making money for themselves.
The law firm that, quite honestly, isn't really a law firm, but you should call us anyway.
Nobody passed the bar. Nobody.
No one took the bar. Nobody studied for the bar.
I thought the bar was soap.
We don't even know what the bar is. Or where it is. What is the bar? I mean, how do you get there?
If you suffer from any of these problems, please call us and tell us how to get to the bar.
I don't think we're going to get any phone calls on that one.
No, probably not.
But we should still go to a bar.
Yes, now. All right, let's shut this thing down. The Modern Materials Safety Data Sheet was developed in the 1960s.
Ooh, I know about that.
Yeah, so yeah, we use it.
We have to use it too.
Yep. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Please elaborate.
It's very occasional, but we do some labels and stuff for companies, and they'll ask us for those because of the adhesives.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. At first used in maritime safety regulations, by 1987, all employers were required to provide information regarding the chemicals used in the workplace. And just in case you don't know, folks out there, sawdust can cause lung cancer.
What?
That was a weird little aside.
Well, no, that's just part of the material data safety sheet. So we have to post things up all over our facility saying that sawdust can cause all sorts of
really?
Problems. Oh. One of them being cancer. I don't personally know anybody who has the saw cancer, but you know,
saw cancer. It's pretty crazy that some of that stuff, because like the it's really only one company that I personally deal with that asks for those things, and I get stuff all the time from compliance stuff that they're no joke. Like, and that shit's hard to fill out. Like the websites and stuff, it's really complicated.
Yeah, it is.
It shouldn't be that complicated, but it is. But it's no joke. It's something that's taken very seriously.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
I have similar experience with that too, Kevin, where I've had to like fill out all of these ridiculous declarations.
Yeah, the declarations, exactly. Yeah.
And I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing, but I try anyway.
I do it, and then they say thank you, it's approved, and I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I don't really know what I did, but...
You're like, really? So in construction of the Golden Gate Bridge, and again, this I know Greg hates when I go chronologically, and he also hates
I like chronological.
He also hates when I jump around.
No, I don't.
I'm just kind of jumping around. But
I'm pretty
really
sure his head exploded when you went from like 20 BC to 1911. I'm pretty sure like that was not good for him.
No, John Banks is like the Quentin Tarantino of this podcast.
I mean, there was some like around like zero, the year zero, there was some... like cross safety stuff, but I didn't really get into that. So cross nails, wooden hammers, spears, shields,
yeah,
you know, but
yeah, well,
was that a Jesus thing?
You got to keep them up there. You know, you can't have bodies falling around.
You cannot.
That would be a lawsuit waiting to happen.
You gotta have nail integrity.
Jesus. Well, you guys are lumber guys. What kind of wood's the best to use?
It doesn't really matter. As long as it's not like balsa wood.
I tell you what, if we haven't lost our Christian listeners yet, that might have done it.
I think we lost them 6 episodes ago.
Yeah, or 71 episodes ago.
But if we have it,
this
thank
is
you
episode
for sticking
72,
with us.
By the way.
Thanks for turning the other cheek.
Oh, nice, Greg. Very good. Very good. When construction of the Golden Gate Bridge began in the 1930s, the industry had come to expect shit. I swear, it's the crazy shit. The industry had come to expect one death for every $1 million spent on a project. But chief project engineer Joseph Strouth found this unacceptable. He commissioned
two deaths.
Well, no.
This is not nearly enough death.
We can certainly kill 9 to 10 more people per $1 million.
It's kind of weird that he had his ex-wife working with him up on the bridge.
He commissioned a rope and mesh safety net under the floor of the bridge during the construction of the roadway structure. The net saved the lives of 19 men who were dubbed members of the Halfway to Hell Club. Strauss also required workers to wear hard hats, safety lines, and respirators during riveting to prevent them from inhaling lead-tainted fumes.
Damn, he was ahead of his time.
Yeah, he was way ahead of his time. He was ahead of his time by, I think, 2,000 years. So,
2,000 years?
2,000?
So he's even in the future?
We know I'm not good at math.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's true.
11 workers still lost their lives during that project, including
And how much did the project cost?
That I don't know.
Well, that's what we need to find out, man.
Yeah, how close did they get to their projection?
Somebody Google that. I don't know. But 10 of those died because a scaffold fell and hit them and poked a hole through the net, and they all fell to their death. So there was only one guy who died of something else, but they didn't mention
him. Probably loneliness because those were his 10 best friends.
He died of a broken heart.
Aww. Kind of romantic.
And black lung. Because, you know, it was.
And falling off the fucking bridge.
So, was there like, you know, those all the old timey pictures where they show the people just eating lunch on the beams up at the top of the skyscrapers?
Yeah.
That's not safe.
No. No. Like, can you? I mean,
You think?
Those pictures fucking freak me out, man.
Yeah, I know. How the fuck, like, how do you keep your carrots? Like,
yeah. Can you imagine if you drop food, someone's dying down there.
Yeah. You brought grapes and you spill all the grapes and you're like, oh man, it's killed 13 people.
Yeah. And like, then a dog goes and eats one of them and he's dead.
Wait, he eats the grape or the person?
The grape.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Dogs can't eat grapes.
Yeah.
Grapes. Wait, really?
Yeah.
Aw.
You should stop feeding your neighbor's dog. Grapes. That's why they keep getting new dogs.
John's wondering why there's like so many dead dogs.
Why does your dog keep dying? Here, have a grape, buddy.
I feed them so healthily. I give them nothing but broccoli and grapes and dark chocolate.
So. No, broccoli's okay, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Good, because my dog eats broccoli.
I don't.
Well, la-di-da. I don't.
Should go check on him. I haven't seen him in a few weeks.
But you're still feeding him broccoli.
Yeah, I just leave it out.
All right, so according to the website of the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency, or arpanza.gov.au.
Those weren't any of the letters you used.
Australian A
acronym ever.
Fuck it. I'm just moving on. The first age of safety management started with the Industrial Revolution and the invention of the steam engine. This is known as the technology age of safety. Most accidents at this time were from the technology failing, injuring workers and the public. The focus of safety was to ensure the technology was safe to use. This technical age saw improvements in the ability to identify the, quote, broken part, the part of the technology that failed, and avoid single component failures. So an example of this failure of technology was the Philadelphia train accident that occurred on July 31st, 1815, in Philadelphia, England, when an early experimental railway locomotive, Bruton's Mechanical Traveler, which we've actually mentioned this before in one of our podcasts, suffered a boiler explosion. And this engine, also known as the steam horse, ran on four wheels, but was pushed by mechanical feet. So literally, I wish I had a picture of it. It was four wheels, and at the back of it, it had these like things, and it was little feet like pushing along.
So what failed?
The feet.
The feet failed.
No, the engine. The feet like,
got bunions.
So it exploded because basically steam, I didn't know this. So when water into steam, you're expanding it 1,700 times.
Is that all?
That's it.
So that's where the power comes from? Is that expansion?
Well, the steam would turn the would turn like a wheel, which would like would turn something. Which I'm not a fucking engineer.
What the fuck does John know?
I don't know.
He starts to speak with authority about something he's never even thought of.
So I'm going to get into some like there's like some nuclear like nuclear energy, nuclear meltdowns. And I was like I was trying to figure out like how to explain. I was going through reading like, all right, I'm going to kind of explain like how this happened. And honestly, I was just like, you know what? This is going to be the fucking Dow episode all over again. Kevin's going to have a bunch of questions for me. Yeah. I'm not going to answer them. He's not going to understand it. It's going to confuse our viewers. And then we're going to talk about something else.
You can't even get Massachusetts right.
I know. That's why I'm not doing it.
Oh,
I'm going to get back to this train thing.
So there were 13 people that were killed in an accident. And most of them were spectators.
So, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
So how did they die?
Explosion.
I'm assuming metal shards going through their
just
bodies.
Just like being too close to the explosion? Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah. That's fucked up.
They were basically like, these things were like bombs when they would go off. Yeah. So. And they would just throw metal everywhere, and like they would sometimes like a car would explode, and it would explode. It would like throw it up in the air, and it would land on another car.
Yeah, I mean, you think about some of the stuff that's just pretty basic to us, but they had to test this shit at one point.
And right. Well, that's
that,
like
that couldn't have gone well every time.
That's if you look around the world, like there's just like everything we do, almost everything we have now has some sort of safety feature, mm-hmm. right?
It has to.
Yeah. And it comes from somebody going, oh, fuck, I burned my hand. Oh, we should put a thing there that won't allow you to burn your hand.
Yeah.
Greg?
Yeah, you know that, like, when you see something on that, like, a warning on something, and you're just like, that's stupid. What idiot would do that? You know, someone did. Yeah. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on there.
Someone did and sued.
Yeah, and sued. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I know. Well, I didn't really talk about this, but this isn't really in my research, but I read a lot about this where it's, you have, what's called like safety or security theater, or they'll do things where like there'll be an incidence of one thing happening, and then they're like, all right, we have to do this. So for like the little seal that goes on your medicine, you know, like you buy aspirin, right, and it's got the little foil on top, that was done because like there was like a bottle one time that wasn't even it had mold or something in it, and so then they had to, you know, they were like, oh, okay, we're going to put these seals on it. So, because somebody believed it had been tampered with, but it actually hadn't been tampered with. So, most boiler explosions caused severe mechanical damage, but often only the locomotive crew suffered physically. However, Bruton's locomotive was surrounded at the time by a crowd of curious sightseers who all died.
What a crazy way to go. Look at that train. Oh.
Yeah. You're like, look at the boom. The toot toot. Kaboom kaboom. So. So one safety issue with steam engines is that the boiler will explode if the pressure rises too high. So systems had to be put into place to prevent this. On many locomotives, valves were put into place to release steam automatically if the pressure reached a certain level, which prevented explosions because of user negligence. However, boilers could also explode from becoming weak due to the extreme heat. To combat this, water constantly covered the top of the firebox. However, if the water level fell too low, the fire would directly hit the boiler, causing stress, causing an explosion. So really, you basically just had to have somebody all the time making sure that this thing was running exactly like it was supposed to run. And if you didn't, or if they missed anything, kaboom. So
kaboom, kaboom.
I mean, there's lots of industries and ways you could die if you're not doing your job right, I guess.
And, like getting pierced by a forklift.
Yeah.
Or lighting a match in a gas leak. So.
Or eating matches.
More people die a year than you think.
Or going on the match game.
Wait, like the what was that match game? What was that game called?
The match game.
Was it called the match game?
Dun 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 dun.
All right, because you used to be in like old game shows, right? You and Chino.
Oh yeah, they're hilarious. Like,
yeah,
that game's back. Alec Baldwin is hosting it.
The match game.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
You guys know that my lifelong dream is to be a game show host.
No, didn't know that.
What?
You have to get a much skinnier microphone.
Well, that's true. That's true.
You need to wear more suits.
All right. Well, I'm 0 for 2 so far.
Probably shouldn't wear those headphones. That's not
0 for 3? Okay.
Yep.
And your skin's very pasty white.
All right. Well, makeup can take care of that.
That's true. Makeup can take care of that.
And obviously, if I'm going to be a game show host, I will start tanning.
Obviously.
Or at least being spray tanned.
Hey.
I'm going to look real weird naked, but...
You already do look really weird
Let's be honest. That's already the case, yeah.
It's like you walk into a room nude and you can see everything but your head. So technological failures, problematic for so long, were being engineered out over time. So over time, they were starting to figure out, like, all right, well, we know if we make it out of this gauge of steel, we can keep it from blowing up, or if we have this system, right? And so they really thought, all right, so the problem is, like, it's the technology, so figure out the technology, then boom, solving problem. Well, this is what most people thought for decades until the meltdown of the Three Mile Island reactor. Do you guys, I know you don't remember it because you were too young, but do you know what it is?
I remember it.
Yeah, nuclear meltdown, right? I mean, it was smaller than Chernobyl, as I recall, but it was...
And Fukushima.
But oddly enough, not much smaller.
Really? I thought it was always... I guess, yeah.
Well, that's what I thought, too. And then I was just like, what the fuck? Which is really, like, I was kind of like, am I going to throw this in there? But then I was just like, I have to, because this is crazy. So the accident came as a surprise to engineers and managers. And despite all...
As accidents
do. Yes, by definition.
Typically, they're not like, hey, there's an accident about to happen.
So...
That's not on purpose.
Despite all the risk assessments and technological safety features... The reactor nevertheless melted down. The President's Commission into the Three Mile Island reactor, also known as TMI, found the causes to be people-related problems and not equipment problems. So basically what happened was they have these like filters, and I'm going to do my best to explain this, and I think I'm going to do it. So they have these filters that basically take out heavy metals.
I already have lots of questions.
Yes, heavy metal is music, so it takes out music from the water.
Good.
Yeah. So it takes out heavy metals, so then when the water goes back through the turbine, it doesn't clog up the turbine. We're having problems with the filters. They tried blowing it out with – normally they're super easy to clean. For whatever reason, they couldn't clean these filters, so then they used like high air pressure in the water to blow it out. It got particles in the water, which got into the turbine, which caused a big fucking problem.
Wow, that's what caused it?
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
All those crazy chemical reactions, and that's what caused that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Wow.
It's just literally a little bit of, like, crud.
Yeah, so, and something they knew was a problem, but they couldn't figure out how to beat it.
Right. And they didn't know, like, when they blew it out, they didn't know that they were going to cause that problem.
They were adding more stuff to it.
Right, they thought they'd cleared the filter, and that was, they did, you know, so it was related to that. And if somebody out there is an expert on nuclear, you know, reactors, please reach out to us and correct
also,
me.
Also, why are you listening to us? You're too smart for this podcast.
Well, they do it so they can feel super superior. So.
Yeah, well, that's mission accomplished, I'm sure. So...
The Three Mile Island accident was a partial meltdown of reactor number 2 of Three Mile...
Do you know how long that island was, by the way?
How long Three Mile Island was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was 4 miles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Little known fact.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Wait, is that true?
No, it's 3 miles. I actually don't know if that's...
Because that fucking blew my mind for a second. It's not hard to call it 4 Mile Island. I don't know why they would do that.
It's less letters.
I guess that's true. But just use the digit, and then you know what? Never mind. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, because if you say FMI, TMI just sounds so much better than an FMI. So,
that's true. Yeah.
So the reactor number 2 of 3 Mile Island Nuclear Generating Station in Dauphin County, Pennsylvania, and subsequent radiation leak that occurred on March 28th, 1979. It is the most significant accident in U.S. commercial nuclear power plant history. On the 7-point international nuclear event scale, and I'm going to tell you what all these are in a minute because I was just
is this
like,
a bigger accident than when I shit my pants at work that one time?
I mean, as far as being unhealthy for people, yes.
Yeah, but I didn't. That was a bad day for me.
As far as personal humiliation, no.
Okay.
Have any of these engineers been to a Kohl's recently?
That's Kohl's back.
That's what it was. There was a guy who shit his pants. He didn't want anybody to know, so he caused a nuclear meltdown.
That's a good way to divert attention.
I mean, you know what? Also, mission accomplished. Well, no one knew he shit his pants.
Nope. I mean, until now. You learn to hear first.
Yep. That's what we're here for.
History defeats itself because we make it up.
And that man was John Banks.
No, that's right. I was 4 years old.
Yeah, well, you shit your pants a lot when you were 4 years.
I did. I really did.
this all kind of checks out, John. Why did you do this?
Well, really, more than anything, I was 4 years old, and they should not let a four-year-old tie into a nuclear power plant.
That's true. That's true. So, especially with any sort of responsibility.
Right. Yeah. That was. I mean, they gave me a hard hat and said, you look like you know what you're doing.
You should have at least been like an assistant, not like the supervisor, you know? You have to learn.
I'm like a four-year-old Bjorn.
Like he gets the keys, but they're those plastic keys that are all different colors.
But oddly enough, they worked. They actually worked. Yeah. So on the 7-point international nuclear event scale, the incident was rated a 5 as an accident with wider consequences.
Boring.
So, well, and here is the 7, I get, you know, here's the 7, the events that can happen. So, and it goes, the lowest being, it's an anomaly. Someone, and now, so in each of these had like multiple like explanations of what they are. So it could be different things, but I just picked my favorite. So anomaly, someone got a little bit too much radiation. Just a little bit, right?
Just a skosh.
Just a skosh. The skosh of radiation. Incident, a room that shouldn't have radiation got a little bit of radiation.
Shouldn't every room not have radiation?
Yeah, I feel like there's not a lot that should, yeah.
So far, not that bad. Pretty, nope. You know, a 1, a 2, not a big deal. A 3 is serious incident. That is exposure in excess of 10 times the statutory annual limit for workers. All right?
Okay, yeah, that sounds a little bit
more
harmful.
4 is accident with local consequences, meaning at least one death from radiation.
Okay. I'm sorry, I talked over that. What was that?
It's at least one death from radiation, or another thing could be they make you change the name of your sports team.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's
now you're speaking my language.
Right. Local consequences. 5, which is what the TMI was, accident with wider consequences, which is severe deaths from radiation or severe damage to reactor core. And I don't think anyone died in the TMI. I think it was just severe damage to the reactor core, meaning that they had to shut it down. So 6 is serious accident impact on people and environment. And then 7 is a major incident. And a major incident is a release of radioactive material with widespread health and environmental effects requiring implementation of planned and extended countermeasures. So there's only been 2 of these in the history of nuclear power plants, and those are the 2 that Greg mentioned. That is Chernobyl and Fukushima. So
3 Mile Island didn't register on that?
No, it was a 5.
Oh.
Right. Wow. And so originally Fukushima was a 5, but a couple of weeks later they rated it a 7. Mm. And so that was the Chernobyl was in 1986 and Fukushima was in 2011, which is crazy because that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like 10 years ago.
No, it doesn't.
What does it seem like?
Longer, in my opinion.
I shouldn't speak. 2 years? Oh. 2.5 years?
Hmm. So. And, well... Never mind. I just think it's funny that we all perceive time in a different manner on History Repeats Itself.
What is time anymore, really?
I mean, according to Einstein, it's relative.
It's true.
So, are you impressed?
Not really.
Nope.
Man, you guys are tough. Like, you will just take any moment you can to kick me, but...
Well, you're fishing for a compliment. No one's going to give it to you when you're fishing.
That is true. You are fishing a bit there.
Take your time, John.
I'm going to. For sure. All right. So the second age of safety management focused on the human performance of safety. The thought was if the humans is the safe... What the fuck did I write?
What the fuck are you saying?
I'm talking about this. So these are like different ages and say these are different like progressions of safety, right? So the first one is basically it's all about the technology, and then the second one was they realized that humans can make mistakes.
They realize that?
Well, they realize that humans can make great mistakes that could cause like detrimental or fatalities, right? Like detrimental damage or fatalities. Of course, they knew they could make mistakes, but they didn't think that they could make a mistake so great that it would cause a nuclear meltdown.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So, and some examples of this were the Exxon Valdez oil spill occurred on March 24th, 1989. The tanker hit the Prince William Sound's Bligh Reef, which tore open the ship's hull, causing 10.8 million gallons or 250,000 barrels of oil to spill out and end up on the coast of Alaska.
Is that when Leonardo DiCaprio didn't fit on that door with Kate Blanchett?
Different ship.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
different ship. Same time, though. Same time.
This was the one where they took paper towels and got all the oil out of the water.
Yeah. They used Dawn. Dawn did a bunch of commercials with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Dawn and Bounty.
I remember that. Yeah.
On March 10th, 1989, Air Ontario, Greg, flight 1363 failed to become airborne, as if it is your fault.
Do you know there's an Ontario, California?
Yeah, it's like 15 minutes from here.
Yeah, that's super confusing when you see that.
It's not that confusing.
Yes, but I don't think the investigation would have happened by Canada. It would have been out of Riverside.
No, I'm just saying when you see like Ontario's, CA, I'm like, okay, Canada. It's coming from Canada. That's weird.
That's Kevin's inner voice.
Canada. I didn't order it from Canada, but I guess
I'm kind of hungry. I think I'll drink another beer too, because why not?
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Do you guys know that there's a Portland, Maine and a Portland, Oregon?
Do you guys know that there's a lot of cities in the world that have the same names?
That also is confusing,
there's
by the way.
Pennsylvania. Yeah.
I'm just saying what we're all thinking. That's all
there's
I do.
There's 85 Jaspers, the town I was born in. There's like a Jasper, Kentucky, a Jasper, Mississippi.
See, that's more impressive to me that you know that than the Einstein thing you just said.
That I know the exact number of Jaspers?
Yeah, and you weren't fishing for the compliment. So, You're welcome.
I'm so confused.
Me too.
How was that confusing?
Emotionally, I mean.
Oh, that makes sense.
So on March 10th, 1989, Air Ontario of the country of Canada.
Ah, thank you for clarifying that.
Flight 1363 failed to become airborne on takeoff from Dryden, Ontario, and crashed into a forest, killing 24 of the 69 people on board. The investigation by...
Not great odds, by the way.
By Canada's Transportation Safety Board uncovered a tragic confluence of events that led to the Fokker F-28 taking off with ice on its wings.
Yeah, you got to de-ace those motherfuckers. Okay, John, so is Ontario a city or a province?
It is a province.
Attaboy.
Not in California,
well,
it's not.
Yeah, and yes, in California it is a city. In Canada it is a province.
Okay. Just checking.
In Alabama, that's my Aunt Terry.
Oh.
I tried. I take a swing.
My Aunt Terrio.
That's my Aunt Terrio. So, and then the third stage of safety management focused on organization as well as technology and human error.
Are we going to talk about Homer Simpson?
No. Why? Do you want to?
Yeah. Safety inspector for...
Springfield Nuclear Power Plant,
yeah.
If you guys want to wait, give me another hour. I'll come back with some Homer Simpson stuff.
You won't need an hour.
Totally up to you.
It's fine. All right. I got time.
I think you should keep going.
All right. So the third stage of safety management focused on organization as well as technology and human error. Human error was regarded as the tip of the iceberg for serious latent problems and conditions. From the early 1990s to the early 2000s, companies, governments, and products manufactured for the public began to think more of safety as a series of checks and balances. This still included focus on technology and human error, but we also started to focus more on systems that could prevent accidents before they happened. The system has advanced in the last 20 years to be of a holistic age of safety. It is time for these three middle-aged men to answer nature's call. When we come back, we're going to talk about one thing most of us use every day and all the ways in which it has gotten so much safer over the years.
Dildos.
Shitter.
We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, Mysterians. Hope you got to pee like we did on the break, unless you're driving
your
car.
That's not all we did.
In which case, you're probably very uncomfortable right now. So, there were literally millions, if not billions of things that I could have talked about when it came to safety.
Billions?
Well, I mean, there's literally. Billions of things in the world.
Literally?
I mean, not literally. Should I say literally?
Safety?
Did I say literally?
You did say literally.
I can't back that up. I mean, maybe even not even millions. There could be two.
Okay, the rest of this podcast is John listing off all the things he could have talked about.
Right. So jump in if you can think of anything that I skip.
There's banjo safety.
Banjo safety.
There's disco
safety. Wait, what did you
say? Banjo safety.
There might be billions. There's shaving safety.
Yeah.
Because there actually is a safe way, and there's things you can get to string a banjo.
Hey, you don't have to deconstruct the comedy, buddy. Mm-hmm. Leave that to the pros.
When do they show up?
No, not in this podcast ever.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, so there are a lot of things that I could talk about. And as you two guys know, recently my brother was involved in a car wreck. And he was hit in a head-on collision. And he ended up in the hospital, and he's doing okay. So if anybody's out there concerned, he is doing okay. As of the recording of this podcast, he's probably going to be back at his house in a couple of days. But
I'm a History Defeats Itself listener, and I was not concerned.
You're an asshole. But
I'm just playing the role because you're like, if anybody out there was concerned.
I'm sure people are like, oh, that's so sad. I don't think anyone's like you, Greg. There's only
one. Most people have hearts.
My point was that, of course, people would be concerned.
Didn't come across that way.
Yeah, whatever. I'm also not a History Defeats Itself listener either.
I got way better podcast listeners to this bullshit.
I have no idea how to access this fucking podcast. How do you do it? Yeah.
What am I supposed to do to listen to this thing? I've never even listened to a podcast before.
I keep pressing my Apple Watch. Nothing happens.
I keep pressing a button and I go, podcast, and nothing happens.
Hey, Siri, podcast.
The one that we do, Siri, the one we do.
Play my voice podcast.
My phone started playing a podcast right now because I said, hey, Siri, podcast.
Planet Money.
You're so smart, Siri.
So yeah, so he was involved in an accident. And
hey, Siri, $1 million.
Oh, okay.
Continue, John. I can edit him.
I'm so glad you win, got high. This is going to make it so much better.
Shh. That was a secret between the three of us.
Now it's a secret between us.
I did it on the break, man. We were on a break.
And the world. So he is doing okay, but the gentleman who hit him, he actually did pass away. And that is very sad. But it got me thinking, like, all right, so I'm going to focus on the history or the safety of cars. Because the paramedic or the paramedics there and the state trooper told my sister-in-law that if he hadn't have been in the car he was in, he would have probably died, or it could have been way, way worse for him.
Because his car was very safe?
Yeah, well, because his car was safe, and he was in a Toyota Tacoma, so he was kind of off the ground. The guy who hit him was in a Honda Accord, you know, and but they, you know, head-on collision, you're going combined impact of 100, 110, 120. And I actually learned in this research that if you're ever in a head-on collision, you do not want to hit the brake. The thing you want to do is floor it, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Why? That's
very counterintuitive to what you would think.
Well, because the reason for that is you're hoping that the person in the other car hits their brake. and because then basically what happens in a head-on collision, you have two vehicles that are going at a certain speed, and they hit and they both stop instantaneously. But if you're going faster, then what happens is that car actually stops and starts getting pushed back. So your car is actually slowing down.
You're
impact
not stopping as much.
Right. Right.
But what if both people floor it?
Then you got a Dukes of Hazzard episode. So,
thanks.
Yeah.
Neither's a good option. Let's just say that.
So just don't be in a head-on collision.
Don't be in a head-on collision.
Yeah, don't be
in
a head-on collision.
Well, I speak for everyone. I said, I'm really glad that it's really sad what happened to the other guy, but I'm glad your brother's okay.
It really, he was like a 27-year-old guy. He was a teacher. Yes. Like,
tragic.
He was very well loved in his community. Yeah. It really is horrible.
Yeah, it's
awful. So, but it kind of inspired this whole podcast. And so each year, about 37,000 people are killed in motor vehicle crashes. Car crashes are the leading cause of death for people younger than 25 in the United States. Of those 37,000 people a year that are killed, around 10,000 of them are not wearing seatbelts. So, and it is believed that if all of those 10,000 would have wearing seatbelts because of the types of crashes they were having, you would have had about 2,800 people who would not have died. So you still would have had 7,200 that would have died wearing a seatbelt, but
because of the nature of the crash, wouldn't have mattered anyway. Kind of
right?
Thing.
There's just there's just a certain, you know, like if you're just going a certain speed, a human body, it doesn't matter with the technology we have now, right? But a seatbelt has saved a lot of lives. So. As the start of the 20th century, speeding, reckless driving, collisions, and pedestrian fatalities were new problems as the automobile had just been invented. The first solution was a social response focused on controlling and improving driver driver behavior. By the early 1920s, the National Safety Council compiled accident statistics, held conferences, and sponsored Safety Week campaigns in cities in the hope that increased public awareness would promote careful driving. Controlling driver behavior through laws, fines, signals, and drunk driving arrests were obvious ways to decrease the fatality rate. It didn't really do anything, because people are people. And if we've learned anything through this pandemic, people are just going to do whatever they want to do.
That's very true. So,
doesn't matter. You can't convince people to do something they don't want to do.
Even if it's in their best interest.
It's like really insane.
Actually, especially if it's in their best interest.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
That really grinds people's gears.
Yeah.
Don't tell me like, what I need to do.
You're not going to take away my freedom. I'm not going to wear a seatbelt. I'm an American, goddammit.
Don't tread on me, John.
Especially after I fly through the windshield of this car for not wearing a seatbelt. So, but before we get into the safety evolution of the automobile, we must talk about the road safety regarding multiple vehicles being driven on roads at the same time. So the number of automobiles and trains increased significantly in the earliest 20th century, and so did collisions at railroad crossings. Many drivers did not stop or even slow down at crossings. So in 1921, Charles Adler Jr., a Baltimore inventor who devoted his career into improving railroad. I'm getting a little drunk, fellas. I realized.
Boxed wine will do that to you.
Boxed wine will do that. And I haven't had any food today. So
that's not true.
No, that is true.
McGriddles count as food, John.
No, they do not.
It's barely, but it does.
Not on a nutritional level, but...
not on anything level. I mean, they're basically... I could have eaten cardboard, and that probably would have been just as filling and healthy.
Probably healthier, to be honest with you.
Probably. Railroad and aircraft safety designed and installed a train equated crossing signal that turned a double stop sign toward motorists when a train was approaching. The movement of the sign provided a visible warning that driving conditions had changed. So basically, yeah, so this guy created, you know, like it, he basically created, it wasn't a railroad thing, you know, now you have the railroad thing come down, but basically what it was like it would like flip around. And it was like some sort of thing that like when the train hit it from a certain distance, it would flip it around. So it was like a pressure device. And until the 1930s, a driver detained on suspicion of intoxication underwent police evaluation of his or her speech, eyes, gait, odor, color, and behavior to determine whether excess amounts of alcohol had been consumed. So used to be cop pull you over for drunk driving. They just look at you and be like, yeah, you're drunk or you're not drunk. And then send you on your way or take you to jail. And then this guy, Dr. Rolla N. Harger, a chemistry professor at Indiana University School of Medicine, constructed a blood alcohol measuring device that used a breath sample blown into a balloon, which he named the drunkometer, which right now I think we would all fail.
For such a nerdy scientific guy, he sure came up with a dumb name.
This is the don't drive drunky thingy. I made it with a balloon.
Hey, listen, the guy's super smart, not creative.
It's true. He went home and was like, honey, what do you think I should call this? She's like, you're a drunk-o-meter.
She was hammered at the time.
Yeah, shut up, Rolla. What kind of
shut
name
up,
is that?
Smarty pants. Just call it the fucking drunk-o-meter.
Ooh, I know about chemistry and balloons and breath.
Let's have sex.
Angry drunk sex, you
sexometer sex. I don't know. I figured we already got our projects done. It's time to have a little fun.
And so, in the early 1950s, Robert F. Borkenstein, poor family, the Borkensteins. Have you met the Borkensteins? Lovely people. An Indiana State police officer developed the breathalyzer, small and portable. The breathalyzer was easier to operate than the drunk-o-meter, had a better name, and provided faster, more reliable results. And then this was, so the world's first traffic signal, man, I am getting drunk. I'm going to stop drinking that wine.
Power through with the wine, man. Power through.
So the world's first traffic signal.
Jesus, John.
Signal. And something about saying the world's first traffic signal was actually in London, and it was gas-powered and operated by a police officer. And it was like 1868, I believe, and it blew up. So, and it actually hurt the police officer, but it had to be like hand-operated. But the first electric traffic light was at Euclid Avenue and East 105th Street in Cleveland, Ohio. And that was on August 5th, 1914.
Cleveland. Huh.
Ohio.
Ohio.
Home of the Cleveland Champions. Or what are they going to change their name to?
Oh, John.
The Patriots?
Guardians.
Oh, that is a stupid name.
It's a really stupid
name. They got
Cleveland, also home to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, correct.
They could be maybe the Cleveland Traffic Lights? Are they Cleveland Stoppers?
None of these are good names, John.
Okay. I mean, neither is the Guardians, so.
I think if they tried that, people would be like, the Native American community would be like, just use Indians. this is just terrible.
You guys are just not very smart or
this
creative.
This is just not going well. I think you should just go back. We concede.
Right. You're not racist. You're just simple folk who can't really come up with stuff.
Just really stupid.
Yeah, yeah. The first stop sign was posted in Michigan in 1915. Originally, they were square-shaped, measuring 2 feet by 2 feet, and featured black letters on a yellow background that said, stop.
Stop. Mm. Oh, give us a chance to guess.
I'm sorry. What did you think it said, Greg?
Yield.
Yep.
Go.
Nailed it. So Americans, and I know this is going to surprise you guys, but Americans were slow to understand the importance of redesigning automobiles to make driving safer.
What?
I know. In the beginning, the automobile was perceived as a neutral device that merely responded to a driver's commands and could not cause an accident. But by the late 1920s, manufacturers acknowledged that design flaws comprised safety issues. They introduced a technological response to safety issues, adding shatter-resistant windshields and four-wheel brakes instead of two-wheel brakes. Starting in the 1950s, physicians and university professors who were concerned about motorist protection introduced a scientific response to auto safety problems. Crash testing at universities pinpointed the causes and effects of bodily impact inside a car during a collision. These studies convinced many people that it was necessary to, quote, package the driver and passengers with seat belts and padded dashboards. And by 1956, God damn it. I'm going to switch this wine for water.
Sweet nectar. Oh, that's water.
That's clear wine.
All right. By 1956, those features were available as options on most new cars, but not required by law. So you could go and be like, hey, can I get one of them seatbelts? And they're like, sure can, as long as you get that undercoating. Greg knows.
You sold cars.
I did sell cars, yeah.
Yeah.
They gave you seatbelts, but they weren't attached to anything.
They just hand them to you?
Yeah.
I mean, put them wherever you want. I don't know.
It was actually just lasagna pasta. They're like, here you go. Like, okay.
Lasagna pasta.
Better than nothing. I mean,
did he just knock over his mic?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. He's very, very high on the pot.
I don't think it's better than nothing.
I think Kevin's the only one hanging in here.
Yeah, but I think I'm getting I think my fever's coming down.
Okay.
So we're all in a bad spot.
He is starting to sweat. I can tell
he's sweating.
I'm sweating
a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, God. Remember doing the podcast with COVID? Awesome. That sucked. All right. At first, most motorists didn't...
I can't believe how bad Kevin's glowing now that you mention it.
It's very shiny. You need to go powder. Go powder, buddy.
His bangs are clumping together.
I know.
Well,
you know, I mean, come on, man. It's humid in here from all my sweat.
At first, most motorists did not wear seatbelts, but by the 1990s, seatbelts were widely accepted. Safety campaigns emphasized the importance of buckling up, and state laws made motorist compliance mandatory.
You can't take away my freedom, man.
But they did. They did. Oh. Do you guys remember there was like commercials, like I think it was like the late 80s where it would be like a woman getting in the car and she's like, I don't want to put on a seatbelt because I don't want to ruin my dress. And then it would cut to like a woman who had been like, had brain damage from it being a car wreck. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry, sweetie. And like somebody's putting her in the car and they're like, oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to, we're going to mess up your dress by putting the seatbelt on. Do you remember those commercials?
Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah, there was like a whole series of them. So.
I remember the ones where they cracked an egg and then said, this is your brain on drugs?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Do you remember the shirt that was, this is your brain on drugs and this is two pieces of bacon?
No, but I bet you have it.
I don't.
What?
I can't find it.
Someone out there find this shirt for John.
Yeah,
it's please. Like the only novelty shirt he doesn't have.
Yeah, yeah. By 1998, the federal government also required airbags as standard equipment. Forced technological change made the automobile itself the first line
what
of
year
defense.
Was
1998.
98 was the first time they required airbags.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know it was that late.
Well, and so, and what's really, so, and I think what's really fascinating about just the safety is that, you know, so it's like everything's going along fine and then something horrible happens and they're like, oh shit, like we didn't think about this, or maybe they did and they're just like, oh, it's nobody's carriers or it'll be too expensive or what, I don't know, right? Whatever the thought process is, but then something happens. And so like originally airbags, the original airbag, it would keep you from smacking into the steering wheel, but it would also, the chemicals used in it were incredibly hot. So what would happen is, so you wouldn't crash in the steering wheel, but everybody was getting like third-degree burns on their faces.
I remember that, yeah. Or I remember hearing about that, yeah.
And so,
do you guys remember those, that SNL spoof where like there was like an airbag crash that blew up and then it turned into like Jiffy Pop? you get to have a snack while you're waiting for the ambulance.
I remember that. Yes.
No,
yes.
That's awesome.
But then later, I can't remember the exact year, but I think it was early 90s or maybe mid 90s, they changed the chemical compounds, and so then it became a cool gas. So then you wouldn't...
acid to your face?
Yeah.
So then it became like dry ice on your face?
Yeah, pretty much. So...
Yeah, you know what it's like your face just sticks to it?
it was just a pillow. They just started taping pillows to your steering wheel. The seatbelt is one of our best protections in a car crash. And in fact, and according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, seatbelt use is the most effective way to save lives and reduce injuries and crashes, as more than half, 53 to 59% of teens aged 13 to 54 years old who died in crashes in, and this is from 2014, were unrestrained at the time of the crash.
Do you know what's even more effective?
What's that?
Abstinence.
I don't think that works in car crashes.
Yeah, if you don't drive,
yeah,
just don't drive.
That's true. But what if you get hit by a car?
Jump. Tuck and roll? I don't know.
Jump and run.
Frogger.
So wait, there's logs coming down. So there's logs.
And alligators.
Yeah, and cars coming down the freeway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where was that highway at? <That's>, you know?
The south.
Combination of the bayou and I don't know what else.
So, yeah, it was Montgomery, Alabama. The seatbelt was invented by George Cayley, an English engineer in the
George K. Seatbelt.
Yep. Georgie Seedy, king of the belts, an English engineer in the late 1800s who created those belts to help keep pilots inside their gliders. However, the first patented seatbelt was created by American Edward J. Claghorn on February 10th, 1885, in order to keep tourists safe in taxis in New York.
Oh, that's weird, because anytime I get in a taxi, I never put on a seatbelt.
Really?
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either.
Really?
I don't know why. I
don't know why either. I should, but I don't.
You feel safe with him just driving through red lights. You're like, yes. Yeah, that's fine.
He's a professional, John.
Yeah.
You don't want to insult him.
Yeah.
Like, person I've never met, I have faith in you. And that's weird. Really?
I don't. And in Uber, I don't really do it either.
Yeah. I feel like you need an escape plan.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the back seat. What could go wrong?
Or you're on vacation or something. Yeah. I don't know. You're in a cab.
Yeah. 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 That's okay. Okay.
John's all like, I click it, man.
I do.
Safety goggles.
The real breakthrough with modern seatbelts came in 1958 when Swedish engineer Niels Bohlin invented the three-point seatbelt, which better protects the driver and passenger in an accident. Up until this point, seatbelts in cars were two-point lap belts, just like the ones you use on an airplane.
And your mom putting her hand in front of you.
Yeah, when she was slowing down too fast. That a lot. So, broke her arm a lot. So.
I remember my dad had a 69 Camaro growing up, and it was like you had the shoulder and the lap belt, but they were separate.
Oh, that's interesting.
So you had to put the lap belt on, then you had to grab the shoulder strap and put it across you and then put that in separately.
Remember like in the, was it late 90s, early 2000s when cars had automatic seatbelts?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. Those were so obnoxious. I'm glad they got rid of those.
I remember... I think Ray asked me, he's like, why don't cars just automatically put a seatbelt on you? I'm like, I have a story for you.
It didn't go well.
It's called a 1991 Honda Accord. Go get in one. See what happens.
Yeah.
Well, and also, remember when you had antennas, like the electric antennas?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I will say I do get, I don't drive without a seatbelt, but there are times where I'm just moving the car from the street to the garage or something like that, and the fucking dinging drives me crazy.
Well, that's why.
Shut up, yeah, I'm not going very far.
I always, like, I'll put something in the driver's seat, I mean the passenger seat, that's a little bit too heavy.
Oh, yeah.
And then it'd be like, that fucking car, it dings for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it gets fat.
You know what, the answer to that, John, is do what everybody else does, put the dead body in the trunk.
I don't have a trunk. It's an SUV.
Okay. Well, in the hatch. Whatever it is, John, just don't put it in the passenger seat.
If I put the dead body in the front, it looks like a passenger.
I know you want to drive in the carpool lane, but still.
It's why I kill people.
It's the only thing. That's the only way I get to work on time.
It's not me. It's traffic in LA. It's not me.
So you kill people, you get into a car accident with them, so then you get away with murder.
And you're like, apparently, while they were going through the windshield, someone stabbed them 13 times.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
We still haven't worked out where all the semen came from, but...
Oh, no, that's me. I get what's called fear ejaculates.
This is a dark episode.
That's the only way you can come now, is when you're scared.
You know, I'm not an expert on car crashes, okay?
But exactly. I do recommend safety belts. I'll say that right now.
So, the original lap belt, one of the problems with it is if you had a really bad car crash, it could sometimes cause severe back injuries.
Right.
Which is what the three-point seat belt stopped.
Well, that was always like the people who didn't want to wear seatbelts were always like, there's more of a chance of you getting hurt by the seatbelt than getting hurt without the seatbelt or something like that.
Right.
It's like, no.
There's more of a chance of getting hurt from the vaccine than
COVID. Right. Exactly.
Right.
God, there's been stupid people for a long time.
Well, so I'm kind of, is it stupid or is it fear? Because I think everything comes down to fear, right?
I think
so
that people just don't want to be uncomfortable.
For the seatbelt thing?
Yeah.
I mean, have you had your spine severed? That seems pretty uncomfortable to me.
Yeah, so. No. I honestly can't relate to that, but...
You're like, nope.
No. Yeah.
Look at this.
But again, I believe in science and data. So, you know?
As do I. So up until this point, seatbelts and car, which strapped across the body with a buckle placed over the abdomen. The three-point design was created to help secure both the upper and lower body. When Boland passed away in 2002, Volvo had estimated that the seatbelt had saved more than 1 million lives in the 4 decades since it was introduced. I don't know where they get that number from, but if that's an accurate number, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, they get it from the accidents they have that they can tell you would die if you weren't wearing a seatbelt, John. Yeah.
I don't understand what you're saying right now.
I know.
Get your head out of your ass, John.
Okay. Well, that's why I had that wreck. It's hard to see with your head in your ass. Do you guys know, so there are 50 states in America, nope. 49 of them have seatbelt laws.
Sounds familiar.
Guess which state doesn't?
Alaska.
I was actually, like, surprised.
Alaska?
No.
Feels southern. I'm gonna go Mississippi.
I mean, that's, I would have definitely thought Mississippi, but it was New Hampshire.
What?
Yeah,
really?
New Hampshire. And each state, like, so there's some states that have
that's weird. I mean, they're all tucked away down there, so
I think maybe if you hit a moose, you got to get out and give them CPR. And if you got a seatbelt, get your seatbelt on.
What?
It's gonna slow you down. Moose will die.
Hey, makes sense to me, man.
Yeah, all right. I didn't know New Hampshire had so many meese.
There's a flock of meese. Look at them. So beautiful in the air.
After you hit them.
That's true. So since the advent of the three-point seatbelt, they've come up with some other things. So you have something called a locking retractor. So do you know how sometimes you get in your car and you move forward real fast and your seatbelt locks?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've noticed that, John. What's that called?
That's called a locking retractor.
Yeah. And you know what's annoying? When that thing is malfunctioning and you can't get the seatbelt and you're just fucking grabbing it like that.
It's sucking the air out of your lungs.
Yeah. You're getting angry because, you know, you have to get to work.
And that's just making it
in
worse.
Bad mood, like, already. And,
It's like fighting a python that's squeezing on you.
Yeah.
And the dead body that's in the other seat that you totally forgot to buckle up before you got in the car. You realize you didn't do that.
And the poop that's in your pants.
Yeah.
And the semen that's coming out, too.
Yep.
From your fear ejaculations and shits. Apparently, there's shits, too, now.
All orifices are excreting.
And then some, and you have 5 minutes to get to your game show audition, and you're just not going to make it.
You haven't even gotten your makeup on?
Because you literally have lights in your face?
Don't snap at my dreams!
So that is to stop you from going forward.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but the problem with that is, it's like they made something, and then so one of the problems is that sometimes it stops you too fast. So it stops your body and your head moves forward, so then you get whiplash. So then what they created was the automatic emergency locking retractor. And what that does is when you're in an accident, it locks, but it actually – so it locks and then it gives a couple of times. So it locks, gives, locks, gives, locks, gives. So you're not just like a sudden stop where it's like it's slowing you down within like just, you know, like a tenth of a second.
I wonder if there was like a group of chiropractor lobbyists that were like against that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Probably.
The chiropractor lobby is pretty powerful.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Badass. It's kind of like the tobacco lobby and
mm-hmm. Yep,
bigger.
The NRA
and big celery.
Big celery.
Yeah, for all you know, the juice bars.
Big celery.
I don't know. Is that a? I assume that's a thing.
It could be. Yeah.
Okay. So the auto
that's
industry
so
first
fucking
introduced.
Stupid. It was funny.
So windshields first came on the scene in 1904. And before that, basically cars just had holes. Like, yeah, it was just a space. And so there were no seatbelts or anything. So if you hit anything, you just fly right through that thing. So.
Well, I mean, in some ways that was safer, you know? then you can do Greg's tuck and roll.
Well, to be fair, it was, you know, there was no paved streets. So it was mud. So if you hit mud, you just slide, get up a little dirty, get back in your car and go mm-hmm. home.
What if you hit the crank on the front of your car?
That would be a problem.
Or a horse that you just hit, the buggy you just hit, you know.
Then you just scream at him, get a car, you son of a bitch.
Well, and well, what was funny is the glass was so thin that like if a rock hit the glass, it would actually shatter the glass and people would get wounded from shit hitting the glass. So not really a good thing back in 1904. And then a Frenchman, Edouard Benedictus, and Britain's John C. Wood accidentally developed laminated glass. And this was around the same time the manufacturers were still installing the first windshields in 1909.
What were they trying to make?
I'm sorry?
What were they trying to make?
I don't know. I didn't look that up.
Like candy bars?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Oh, shit.
I don't know.
Windshields actually. For something else.
they were trying to make Oakleys. So... They're like, oh man, people are gonna wear these skiing and they're gonna look so cool.
Mm-hmm. Not snowboarding though.
No. Mm-hmm. Nope. However, laminated glass was not used commercially until World War I. It was used for the goggles of glass mask. So and the first laminated glass put in cars had a layer that would darken and become
Did you say
brittle.
Lemonade glass?
That's what I thought he said too.
Yeah, lemonade. Yeah. Lemonade yeah. glass. Yeah. Yep. That was nothing.
Little just known glass. Fact, lemonade glass is the only glass that'll protect you.
Yeah. So before you get in your car, cut a lemon in half, rub it on your window, inside and outside.
Also delicious and refreshing.
As you hit your head in it.
You're like, ow, what is that smell?
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm dying, but oh, it just is really, really pleasant to be around though.
Am I in an orchard?
It's very zesty.
Am I in a stream? And oh no, that's my blood. That's I'm my just blood. Sitting in my own blood. In the late 1930s, manufacturers began using polyvinyl butyrol (PVB) to make auto
sure
glass clearer and stronger, as well as to help block sound and harmful ultraviolet rays. And they were doing that shit in the 1930s. So again, surprised. Thought that would have been something that happened a lot later.
Yeah, for sure.
So, do you guys know what crumple zones are?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what are they?
There are zones in your car that are meant to collapse,
mm-hmm.
like an accordion, mm-hmm. as you hit something to help absorb the speed and shock of the damage.
It's like race cars. Race cars are built to absorb the energy.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's, yeah, exactly. It's the kinetic
energy.
The cars
are built to collapse around you so they don't, you don't fucking die. Right. So
all the energy gets taken up by all the stuff around you.
Yeah.
And I got high.
And, yeah, so that was that the first high. Time.
And
first
I
time they
high.
Put.
And I got high.
I was going to do a podcast, but then I got high. High. I was going to say something funny, but then I got high.
John drank too much booze, and
I
can't read English.
So crumple zones were the first time that was used in a car was in 1952 in a Mercedes-Benz 220. I'm sorry, 1959. They invented it in 1952. They didn't put it in production in 1959.
Thank God also you clarified that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mercedes would have been all over us.
You stop!
The crumple zone! 7 years later.
Well, these accents. Yeah, we don't do accents. We just,
born in
we
Germany,
don't do accents.
Grew up in Ireland.
Hey, man, that's tough. That's hard. Hard life. Sounds like Bono.
And also the and I couldn't I or I didn't write down the date, but I also know like they you know that also now they have it where the engine drops. So it's like the engine has a point where it will break away if you get hard enough, so the engine doesn't come through the cab.
Oh, wow.
So it actually breaks and drops and falls under the car.
That's great.
It's a squirrel.
Yeah. And the first disc brakes were developed in a Birmingham factory, Birmingham, England, not Birmingham, Alabama, patented in 1902. However, due to technology and material limitations, it took 50 years for the innovation to become widely adopted. And in 1953, caliper-type disc brakes were developed in the UK, first appearing in the Jaguar C-type racing car. The technology was first featured on a product car, production car in 1955 with the Citroën DS. Do you know, guys, what calipers are?
Yes.
What are they? I like this guy.
They hold the brake pads that go around the brake rotor and squeeze together and stop your car.
Are we going to become mechanics after this episode? It's like, here's your mechanic.
Come on down to HDI Mechanics. Well, and also calipers, because it's either there are multiple points of compression, it also helps with overheating.
Sweet.
Yeah. All right, so the anti-lock brake system was originally developed in 1929 for the use in aircraft to prevent the wheels from locking while braking to avoid skids. In 1978, Bosch launched a mass-market system which made ABS compliance on luxury vehicles. The 1985 Ford Granada became the first car to offer ABS as standard.
I don't know if it still does this, but if, like old-school ABS brakes, it would just go...
Yeah, they were like slipping. Yeah, they changed the way it works. So now again, it's like if you were patting the brake, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like a full on lock because you'd hit the brake and it would just take the brake away from you.
That was such a scary feeling when
it really was. Like
yeah,
you're just like, what the fuck did I do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So and then also BMW, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, and Bosch led the invention of the electronic stability control system, which is basically an anti-skid system, right? So what it does is if you start to skid, it will brake one wheel, speed up one wheel, so it adjusts the wheels to straighten you out in a skid. So, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty badass. While you're coming and shitting your pants, your car technology is taking care of you.
Yeah, it distributes like weight and power and stuff like that. I mean, the safety features now are ridiculous. I guess.
Well, and then I'm gonna get like I'm about to go down a list of like things that are available now, and then like and then where we're headed. Right, it's just fucking insane. Like some of the stuff that they're working on.
We already talked about where we're headed on this. We're not going to be driving anymore.
Well, yeah,
cars are going to do all the work.
The cars are definitely going to do all the work. But this was so all of this stuff is like very driver centric, and so now some of the safety features are starting to focus on pedestrians. And so I think I can't remember if it was 1912 or 2012 or 2015. But the Volvo V40 was fitted with the world's first ever pedestrian airbag.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So basically, what it is it's like an airbag that pops out like between the hood and the windshield. So if you hit someone, they will hit the airbag. Which, I mean, if you're going super fast, I don't think that's going to matter.
Yeah, I mean, what about the bumper crushing their midsection? Yeah. Like, does that...
Well, that's the other thing is cars are actually designed to so that you if you hit a pedestrian, they're actually designed where you roll on the hood.
Okay.
That's part of the design has to be...
And then
like
bang into the airbag.
And then fly off the back and...
then you're on your own.
Then, yeah, hey, yeah. We did all we could, you know? I mean,
Your car's like, you know what? I tried. I tried to protect you, but you rolled over the top of the car. Hope you landed on your feet.
So these are some of the safety features that my Porsche have. I don't have a Porsche.
No, I was going to let you go.
It's a Toyota RAV4. So it's fun. My little RAV4.
Couldn't afford the RAV5, huh, John?
Yeah, I couldn't afford it. Yeah, I don't have that RAV5.
You'd be making payments
money
on that for like 10 years.
You don't have RAV5 money?
Yeah. So there's forward collision warnings and automatic electronic braking. So basically this is your car will alert you if you're coming up on a car that is, you're coming up on a car too fast. And then if you don't do anything, it will automatically engage the brakes. And then you have something called crash imminent braking or dynamic brake support, which means that if you're stopping, but the car believes that you're not stopping fast enough, it will apply more pressure to the brakes and stop the car faster.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about that. I've never driven a car with that. My dad was telling me that his car has that, and
I love it.
Do you?
He said
it kind of fucks up sometimes where it doesn't need to do what it does.
It doesn't, but it's like the times where it has it's definitely saved me from crashing into somebody.
Maybe you should pay more attention.
No, I don't think that's the answer. I've only got so many hours in the day.
Well, this HDI podcast is hilarious. The guy sounds a lot like me.
Well, I usually like to read a good book on the way home. And, you know, I'm too tired by the time I get home. I don't text and drive. I read and drive. There's something called adaptive cruise control now, which is where you can set the cruise and you can set. So basically, you don't have to keep stopping or going, putting your foot on the brake. It will adjust the distance between you and the car in front of you. So if you're going 70 and they're going 50, it will slow down to 50. You have blind spot monitoring, which will let you know that there's a car to the right or left of you if you don't see it in your rearview mirror. And this is really cool. So now some cars are starting to get drowsy driver alert or facial recognition software. So basically your car is monitoring you while you're, my car does this. So it's monitoring when you're driving. And if you start seeing facial changes and it thinks you're tired, it's a little coffee cup emblem that pops up. It'll beep, and so basically it's like letting you know, hey, you're tired, you should stop driving.
Wait, that's based on your... Because my car does that, too.
It's based on your facial recognition, yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. Yeah. What if I'm just bored driving and not really tired, per se? Next, I'm going to start driving with my eyes wide open, like... like I'm about to get into...
I mean, what if you're just really drunk? I mean, that's, you know, like... Yeah. That's not fair.
What if you just have a shitty face?
What if you just have one of those naturally tired-looking faces?
Yeah,
what if you're drunk and your car just drives you to jail? You're like, God damn it, Kia.
Stupid Kia.
And so, and now you have like, you know, with Tesla, you have some of the self-driving cars, and then some of the things they're working on. So like you have like, now you have like my car has 10 airbags. There's like a knee airbag, side curtain airbags.
Couldn't afford 11, huh?
Huh?
Nothing.
That's on the RAV5.
But most cars, I think most, like Toyota has this whole safety thing now where on all their cars, no matter what trim level you get, they have all these safety features. But then something Mercedes is doing now that will probably come to like all cars in the next couple of years is if you get hit from the side or if you get hit from any direction, what it actually does is the seat actually will engage and move away from the impact.
Hmm.
Right? That's insane.
That's pretty badass.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing, yeah.
Probably makes you a little dizzy, too.
What if it's really fun, and it's like the best ride you've ever taken for only
Look, it's happening on this podcast right now.
And Kevin, Kevin was saying, that self-driving cars are basically going to be the future, and ultimately the idea of what will happen with self-driving cars is they will communicate with each other, and so you will never have another accident again because all these cars will know where they're at all times, or they will know, or at least they will know the cars that are around them at all times.
I say bullshit. I bet I could get into an accident.
Challenge accepted.
Hold my beer.
All right, guys, it is time for last call. So bring him up. And this one is for my brother, Jason. Jason, get better. Love you.
Jason, get better. Love you, buddy.
Thinking about you, Jason.
Thank you for listening. I hope you weren't listening to the podcast when you wrecked. Mistorians. In the last 140 years, humans have made advancements in technology that have increased the ways we can be injured or die. With every invention that can cause us harm, we eventually catch up and decrease the chance of injury or death. There are needles made to protect healthcare workers from puncturing themselves after giving an injection, life jackets on boats to help prevent drowning, condoms to protect us from the spread of STIs, food regulation to keep us safe from foodborne illness, vaccines, that's a weird way to say that, vaccines that prevent the spread of disease, locks on our doors to keep Greg and Kevin from coming in our house to watch hockey, and there's even chips on our credit cards to keep us safe from fraud. I am known as the doom and gloom host, but I am in awe of how humans keep thinking up ways to keep ourselves safe. When it comes to safety, we're winning. Stay safe out there, and we hope you make history.
Are you itching for a good story? Laughter among friends, maybe even a mystery or two? Well, you're in luck. Fire Breathing Kittens is a standalone Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Each episode is a separate 3-hour long story, like a movie for your ears, so you can listen to these adventures in any order you like. So join us on a real play D&D quest as we solve mysteries, attempt comedic banter, and enjoy friendship. Fire Breathing Kittens podcast. Fantasy, action, mystery, friendship.